Rodgers and Hammerstein, Cole Porter, Yip Harburg, every one of those great songwriters turned down the opportunity to adapt George Bernard Shaw's Pygmalion into a musical comedy. It was too wordy, they said, not romantic. It would just never work as a musical. But librettist Alan J. Lerner and composer Frederick Lowe wanted to try. Together with director Moss Hart, movie and theatrical star Rex Harrison, and a teenage stage ingenue called Julie Andrews, they created a classic, My Fair Lady, as part of the NPR 100, our survey of the most influential musical works of the 20th century, Jeff London prepared this report on the creation of a Broadway masterpiece.
This is a perfect musical.
That's Kitty Carlisle Hart, wife of the late Moss Hart, who directed My Fair Lady.
It's a perfect marriage of story and music and lyrics. They don't come along that often.
And in the case of My Fair Lady, they almost didn't come along at all. Alan J. Lerner and Frederick Lowe, who had written the hit shows Brigadoon and Paint Your Wagon, were approached by Hollywood producer Gabriel Pascal in the spring of 1952 with an intriguing proposition. Pascal owned the rights to the late George Bernard Shaw's Pygmalion and wanted to know if Lerner and Lowe would be interested in turning it into a musical. Shaw's 1914 drawing room comedy of class differences about the misogynistic linguist Henry Higgins, who teaches Cockney flower girl Eliza Doolittle to use proper English, didn't seem on the surface to be fertile ground for a musical. Indeed, in 1978, Alan J. Lerner told the BBC that even Shaw had expressed his doubts about it.
Somebody once asked him about doing Pygmalion as a musical, and he said only Mozart was capable of doing it. So I doubt if he would have ever allowed us or anyone to do an adaptation of it.
Still, Lerner and Lowe decided to take on the challenge, but only a half year later they gave up. Pygmalion didn't allow them to conform to the conventions of the musical stage. The writers couldn't figure out how to open up the story to add a chorus or how to contrive a subplot, which they felt was needed to take pressure off the main plot. When Lerner and Lowe abandoned Pygmalion, they separately moved on to other projects. Then, in the summer of 1954, Lerner opened his morning newspaper to find an obituary for Gabriel Pascal, and his thoughts returned to Pygmalion. He realized that a subplot wasn't necessary. Shaw's characters were varied enough to provide musical contrast, and he also realized that the musical could be opened up just by taking some of the offstage action described in the text and putting it on stage. Lerner called Lowe, and the two men began working immediately. Lerner said that he and Fritz Lowe always started writing songs with a title in mind.
Once I had the title that sort of said what the mood and the idea was, then Fritz would go to the piano and start to play. He had been a concert pianist, so he was the improvising kind of composer. I would sit in the room always. He liked me to sit there when he was composing, because he'd almost go into a trance as he would play. And all of a sudden I'd say, wait, stop, that's fine.
Just you wait, Henry Higgins, just you wait. You'll be sorry, but your tears will be too light. You'll be broken, I'll have money. Will I help you, damn me funny? Just you wait, Henry Higgins, just you wait. Just you wait, Henry Higgins, till you're sick. You scream to fetch a doctor double quick. I'll be off a second lighter and go straight to the theater. Ho-ho, Henry Higgins, just you wait.
Oh, just You Wait was one of the first songs they wrote. Even before the score was completed, Lerner and Lowe decided to pursue Rex Harrison for the leading role of Henry Higgins. They flew to London and wooed him for 5 weeks before he said yes. Harrison, though musical, had never sung on stage before. He told the BBC in 1967 that he developed what he called a talk-singing style for Higgins.
I was using the melody, but not singing it. I mean, I could use notes, and I sometimes, when I was doing the play, I used to use quite a lot of the notes. Sometimes I would use hardly any of the notes, but I was able to sort of jiggle it about.
Why can't the English teach their children how to speak? This verbal class distinction by now should be antique. If you spoke as she does, sir, instead of the way you do, why, you might be selling flowers, too.
I beg your pardon, sir.
An Englishman's way of speaking absolutely classifies him. The moment he talks, he makes some other Englishman despise him. One common language I'm afraid we'll never get. Oh, why can't the English learn to set a good example?
During the trip to London, a friend took Lerner and Lowe to the Covent Garden Flower Market at 4 a.m. on a chilly January morning. Lerner recalled the scene in a lecture at New York's 92nd Street Y.
And we wandered around in the flower market with the people who were selling, the flower girls and so on. And we actually did see a group of Cockneys sitting around a smudge pot fire. But I suddenly realized how much creature comforts meant to those people.
All I want is a room somewhere, far away from the cold night air, with one enormous chair. Oh, wouldn't it be lovely? Lots of chocolate for me to eat, lots of lots of it. Warm face, warm hands, warm feet. Oh, wouldn't it be lovely?
Returning to New York, Lerner and Lowe hired 19-year-old Julie Andrews, who was starring in The Boyfriend on Broadway, to play Eliza. As My Fair Lady approached its rehearsal date, Lerner said that one number came very quickly.
Fritz and I were talking as we walked up the street one day, how shall we end that whole section of Eliza's lessons? And I said, well, why don't we just put all the lessons together and do something called The Rain in Spain? And Fritz said, oh, fine, let's do it as a tango. We walked upstairs to where we were working, and he did it in about 10 minutes.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Again?
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
I think she's got it. I think she's got it.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
By George, she's got it. By George, she's got it. Now once again, where does it rain?
On the plain, on the plain.
Where's that soggy plain?
In Spain, in Spain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Rehearsals began in January of 1956, and despite afternoon tea breaks for the English members of the cast, there was much tension.
Rex regarded himself as the protector of Shaw against the barbaric Americans. And so anytime he came to a line that seemed different, he would say, where's my penguin? And the penguin edition, he'd look it up to see if there'd been any change. So I thought, you don't solve that by confrontation. I went out and I bought a stuffed penguin. And the next day he said, where's my penguin? They rolled in the stuffed penguin and everybody laughed.
I'm an ordinary man who desires nothing more than just the ordinary chance to live exactly as he likes and do precisely what he wants. An average man am I, of no eccentric whim, who likes to live his life free of strife, doing whatever he thinks is best for him. Just an ordinary man.
All of the actors were veteran stage performers, with the exception of Julie Andrews, and it soon became clear that she was having trouble with the demands of her role. Director Moss Hart took the dramatic step of dismissing the entire company for 2 days, and, in a case of life imitating art, he went over her part line by line, dictating the interpretation. Kitty Carlisle Hart.
And because she was so clever and so talented, and such an extraordinary performer, she got it all. But I could hear Moss's voice in her readings for the first 2 weeks of her rehearsals. And after that, she made it her own.
Words, words, I'm so sick of words. I get words already through, first from him, now from you. Is that all you blighters can do? Don't talk of stars. If you're in love, show me. Tell me no dreams filled with desire. If you're on fire, show me. We are together in the middle of the night. Don't talk
must hold me tight. Anyone who's ever been in love will tell you that this is no time for a chat.
The first performance of My Fair Lady took place in New Haven, Connecticut, in the middle of a blizzard. It almost got canceled not by snow, but by Rex Harrison. He felt terribly insecure after a rehearsal with the orchestra and refused to perform.
And he called the producers and he said, I never wanted to be in musical calm. I don't like musical calm. And I don't intend to open this evening. And Moss went to see Rex. And he said, Rex, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to tell that audience, which is mushed through the snow, Rex Harrison is not going to play tonight because he's yellow. Well, that did it. So Rex opened, and of course he was just incomparable.
Damn, 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 damn. I've grown accustomed to her face. She almost makes the day begin. I've grown accustomed to the tune she whistles night and noon. Her smiles, her frowns, her ups, her downs are second nature to me now. Like breathing out and breathing in. I was serenely independent and content before we met. Surely I could always be that way again. And yet, I've grown accustomed to her looks, accustomed to her voice, accustomed to her face.
From its first performance, My Fair Lady was a hit with the audience. But much work needed to be done. Numbers were dropped, dialogue was trimmed, dances were shortened. After 4 additional weeks of polishing and tweaking in Philadelphia, My Fair Lady opened on Broadway on March 16, 1956. All the reviews in the major daily newspapers were raves, and the show took up residence at the Mark Hellinger Theater for 2,717 performances.
Tonight, old man, you did it, you did it, you did it. You said that you would do it, and indeed you did. I thought that you would rue it, I doubted you'd do it. But now I must admit it, that succeed you did.
Kitty Carlisle Hart had known the German-born Fritz Lowe since he was an aspiring composer and pianist in the 1930s.
And he would say, someday I am going to write the best musical on Broadway. And I would think, really? You and who else? Now, lap dissolve, as they say in the movies. And now it's opening night of My Fair Lady, and it's 35 years later, and by this time Fritz and I are old friends. And he came to me and he said, well, I wrote the best musical on Broadway. And I said, boy, did you ever, Fritzy? Did you ever?
For NPR News, I'm Jeff London.
Yeah.